right now, female founders are raising less than 1% of the capital that's raised. You know, we had a record-breaking year for VC in Africa last year. $4.3 billion was raised, but less than 1% of that went to female founders. So there was a huge disparity in terms of access to capital between male and female entrepreneurs. So these factors will continue to persist in our view until there is that addressing of who is actually making the investment decisions. And there's a lot of unconscious bias in the system because of that fact. You know, if we had more women in the room when female entrepreneurs are pitching, I think they will have a better time raising capital.
Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment by focusing on its people and their stories. I'm joined today by Adesua Okunbo-Rhodes, who's the founder of Arua Capital Management, a growth equity impact fund investing in untapped opportunities across Nigeria and West Africa. Founded when she was only 29, Arua manages to change the narrative for women as capital allocators and entrepreneurs by investing in businesses that make an impact on addressing the gender gap. She previously was partner and managing director at Syntaxis Africa, and prior to that, JP Morgan, and also holds a number of director roles, as well as volunteer roles in groups such as Gaia Africa, Sponsors for Educational Opportunity, and Rising Tide Africa. Welcome, Adesua. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's start with your background and career journey. Where did you grow up? What did you study? And how did you come to enter the world of investing?
Yeah, so I was born in Lagos in Nigeria. I did my primary school here, and then I moved to the UK when I was 11 for boarding school and studied economics at the University of Bristol. And kind of in my later years of secondary school, I always knew I wanted to do investment banking. So I did the first part of my investment banking career in London, first with Lehman Brothers and JP Morgan. Executed close to $6 billion of transactions during my time at JP Morgan. I was there for just under 4 years. And prior to JP Morgan, I should mention, I also spent some time at TLG Capital, which is a private equity firm that invests across Anglophone Africa. And we did a deal in Uganda, which is kind of my first foray into private equity and into impact investing, where we invested in a business that locally manufactures anti-malaria and anti-retroviral generic drugs. And I think based on that experience, I was able to see that in Africa, you can invest and make money, but also have tremendous social impact in the society. So going back to JP Morgan, I kind of always knew that I'd want to do something like that back home in Nigeria, but I didn't quite know how I was going to do that yet. So I'm sitting at my desk at JP Morgan and I get headhunted by a European private equity fund that just had under about $300 billion under management at the time. And it was a great opportunity for me to help build out their Africa business. I was headhunted to help them lead their Africa effort. And it was a great opportunity for me to build out the Africa business with an existing platform and an existing brand whilst really pursuing my passion of investing on the continent, where there was that seamless intersection between making money and also doing good and generating social impact in society. So I think that was really how I entered into the world of investing. It was from a background in investment banking, but then actually working with a private equity fund in Africa, and that was, you know, so focused on investing in Africa. That's really where my interest and my passion was birthed for investing on the continent.
And fast forward then to starting your own firm at quite a relatively young age. What was the thought process behind that?
Yeah, I think it was really from an anger at the landscape and the system. And I was during my time at Syntaxis Africa, the fund that I was helping to run. You know, we were fundraising for a fund and I looked around and saw that there were no women owning or running their own funds. And you can't be what you can't see. A lot of these institutional investors that were funding men and not women, I couldn't really blame them because there were no examples of successful African women that had owned and run their own funds. So that's really what drove me. It was really founded on the conviction that we need to have more women and more female capital allocators on the continent. so that we can help to showcase the business case of investing in women as capital allocators, because there's a natural trickle-down effect from women capital allocators to women in our portfolios across every aspect of the company's value chain. And as a result of that, there is, you know, enhanced return. So it was really founded on the basis that we have to have more examples to be able to change the narrative and improve the current imbalance that we have amongst capital allocators globally, but also on the continent. So by launching Arua, it was really my way of being the change that I wanted to see, and using Arua as a case study to showcase what's possible when women are in the investment decision-making roles and when women are allocating capital.
And you also make a real impact on female entrepreneurs, given that you look at everything through a gender equity lens. Can you just paint a picture as to what the landscape is like for female entrepreneurs in Nigeria and Africa in general? What is the, say business owners, investors, what is the kind of percentage of females and how are they faring?
Yeah, so as you correctly said, you know, I decided to launch Arua as an early stage in growth equity gender lens fund. So we're investing in businesses for women and by women. And there's intentionality around that because right now, female founders are raising less than 1% of the capital that's raised. You know, we had a record-breaking year for VC in Africa last year. $4.3 billion was raised, but less than 1% of that went to female founders. So there was a huge disparity in terms of access to capital between male and female entrepreneurs. AFDB estimate that there is about a $42 billion gap between the funding that male entrepreneurs are getting versus female entrepreneurs. So the way that we think about it at Arua Capital is the only way that you can change that imbalance is if you have more women allocating capital. And on my last count, we could only count less than 10 private equity funds that have successfully raised capital, have successfully closed their funds in the last decade on the continent, less than 10, where these are women owning and running their own funds. So there is a huge disparity in terms of the gender gaps that we're seeing in society with regards to female entrepreneurs accessing capital because of the imbalance that we're seeing amongst capital allocators. So these factors will continue to persist in our view until there is that addressing of who is actually making the investment decisions. And there's a lot of unconscious bias in the system because of that fact. You know, if we had more women in the room when female entrepreneurs are pitching, I think they will have a better time raising capital. So that's what Arua Capital is very passionate about changing, is making sure that we're able to showcase the real potential of backing women as capital allocators and also backing women as female entrepreneurs, because there is such an arbitrage opportunity because of the limited competition that we see in the space. So we're excited to really showcase the business case of investing in women across all levels of society.
And what kind of a reception have you had from investors as to both your mission of the fund, the impact it's creating? How has that been received?
Yeah, I think we've received very good feedback. I think, you know, our focus is investing in businesses that are either providing essential goods and services to women or businesses that are founded by women, co-founded by women, or have a gender diverse management team or value chain. So when we say we invest in the gender lens, I think a misconception is we're only investing in female entrepreneurs, but we invest in female entrepreneurs, but also businesses that are improving the lives of women. So access to healthcare, access to financial inclusion, access to credit, access to power. These are things that we also believe are very, very critical in providing to women and the African population at large. And I think for us, you know, we've had a very good reception from our investors. Our investors are typically foundations, family offices, impact investors. And, you know, I'm happy to say that we've done 6 investments so far that are really validating our strategy of investing with a gender lens, investing in what is an untapped and overlooked segment of the ecosystem where we can generate very attractive financial returns, as well as also attractive social returns and women economic empowerment outcomes as well. So having that triple bottom line effect, I think, is something that has been received very well by our investors.
And you've said that we don't just need more seats at the table, we need more tables. I think that's a great expression. And what do you mean by that? And how is some of the impact you're effecting changing that?
Yeah, so I think what I mean by that is we need more women as capital allocators. We need more female fund managers. We need more women owning and running their funds. I think that, you know, some organizations try and put a rubber band on it and have a woman that's a partner at the fund, but is not sitting on the IC, but doesn't have any economics at the GP level. So I think that's what I mean, is we don't want seats at the table. We want ownership. Ownership is what I think will help to drive the change that we want with regards to the disparities that we're seeing for women in society today. We need ownership. We need women to be owning and running their own funds. We need women in funds that are partners, sitting on investment committees, making investment decisions, and making investment decisions and also benefiting from those investment decisions in terms of ownership. Because I think once you have that, there's a very, very natural trickle-down effect to women across all levels of the value chain of our portfolio. So whether it's women as consumers, women as board members in our portfolio companies, women as distributors, women in our supply chains, within the value chains of our businesses, women in management, women in the workforce, there is such a huge multiplier effect as a result of that trickle-down effect, because women are typically reinvesting in everyone else. You know, women reinvest 90% of their income into their children, into their family, into healthcare, and into education. So that's what I mean by we need more tables. We need more ownership. We need more women actually allocating capital, making the investment decisions. Because for me, that's very, very closely correlated to how we fix the gender gaps in society.
And we spoke about investing through this gender lens. But in terms of your other things you're looking at in your investments, what's the investment landscape like for the target portfolio companies that you're focusing on? And how much do other ESG factors factor into that? Say, I'm thinking of sustainability, perhaps resilience around climate change.
So I think for us, you know, one of our key pillars is renewable energy. So we're investing in things, and we say that we invest in essential goods and services that the rapidly urbanizing and rapidly growing African population will need over the next 30 to 50 years. And for us, that's access to healthcare, that's access to financial services, that's access to power through renewable energy, and access to essential consumer goods. So climate is definitely something that we're thinking about. As you know, in Nigeria, there's significant lack of access to power. And we've actually just invested in a company that is a producer of solar-enabled refrigeration that micro-SMEs and off-grid areas are in high demand of. So I would say ESG is a factor across every aspect of our investment process, from screening to due diligence to post-investment monitoring, and climate change is at the forefront of that, because there's actually quite an interesting correlation between climate and gender that we're seeing, where it's women that are typically using eco-friendly products. It's women that are typically at the forefront of using some of these solar-enabled products, either for commercial or domestic use, because they're the ones that are typically in charge of providing for the family and also taking care of the home. So yes, climate is also something that we're very, very focused on, and making sure that we're investing in the tech-enabled solutions that are able to address the lack of access to power that we see in our markets.
And just in terms of the industry as a whole, what is your thoughts on the industry? Say, do you have many fellow female capital allocators that you come across, whether in Nigeria or elsewhere? And how about the pipeline in terms of young women entering the pipeline? How would you kind of score that today?
Yeah, I would say that we're still at very, very low numbers. So I think I was reading somewhere that only 1.3% of the $69 trillion in AUM is being run by women and minorities. And that's, I think, in the US. In Africa, as I mentioned, I think there's less than 10 women that have successfully raised and closed their private equity funds in the last decade. So we're starting from a very, very low base. I think that there is right now a lack of diversity in private equity, where women are still not owning or running their own funds. We're still starting from very, very low numbers. But I think that with the likes of Arua and others that will come, where we're able to successfully raise funds, successfully deploy funds, have successful exits, be able to raise subsequent funds and deploy those funds, I think that's when we'll start to be able to encourage institutional investors about the business case of investing in women as fund managers and the business case of investing with the gender lens as well. So I think more will come, but we're still at a very, very low base today. But I'm hopeful that, you know, as we have more success stories from Arua and others that are coming up, that we'll be able to change that narrative.
So just in terms of raising capital for an Africa-focused fund, how do you think that international investors perceive the risks of Africa? Do you think that those are accurately perceived? Do you think that they're distorted in some way?
Yeah, I think there's a very huge perception versus reality gap. So a lot of international investors may, you know, I think it's a lot better than it was maybe 10 years ago. But I think there is still that perception that Africa is a jungle. But I think, you know, with everything that we're seeing happening in the VC space now, where we have large American funds, SoftBank, Tiger Global, Andreessen Horowitz, you know, you have all these large blue chip names now looking to invest on the African continent. I think people are starting to realize that Africa really is the last frontier for growth. There's so much that's still happening with basic goods and services, where we still have very, very low penetration of services amongst our population. 70% of our population is under the age of 35. So where's growth going to come from in the next 50 years? You know, we strongly believe it's going to be Africa. So yes, there's still that perception versus reality risk gap, but I think that can be bridged by working with funds like Arua, where, you know, we're here on the ground and we're living and breathing and using these goods and services on a daily basis, and can really help to bridge that gap and help to educate some of these foreign investors. And I think now that we have so many examples of unicorns and exits and billion-dollar companies that are emerging out of Africa, not just Nigeria, but every part of Africa, international investors are now really starting to realize that there is something here that should be included in anyone's investment portfolio. So yeah, I think times are getting better, but there is still some education that needs to be done.
And given you're on the ground, some of the concerns might have been around governance, say, and enforcement or rule of law. In your view, have some of those risks subsided at least to the level that they would be in, say, other countries?
Yes, definitely. I think that governance, that's definitely something that we are also very, very conscious and cognizant of. And I'd say that as we've had more political stability in countries, ease of business has improved, governance has improved, the legal structure and being able to actually run companies has improved, you know, the enabling environment for businesses to thrive has improved. So I would say that compared to 10 years ago, that's also something that has significantly improved in our markets. And people here in Nigeria, and obviously that's something that obviously always comes up. But I think as you've seen how we've progressed in the ease of doing business rankings, I think we're getting better every day to improve the enabling environment of businesses for sure.
So you're involved in many groups and volunteer roles such as GAIA Africa, Sponsors for Educational Opportunity, and Rising Tide Africa. And these are obviously causes that are close to your heart. Can you just talk a little bit about some of them and what they're seeking to achieve?
Yeah, sure. So if I start with GAIA, so GAIA Africa is a professional women's club that's catering for the top five executives, female executives in Nigeria. It's a space for women to come together, to network, to learn, to do business together. And it's a very, very unique, I don't think there's anywhere in Africa, definitely not anywhere in Nigeria, where we've been able to create this club for women. Men have been doing this for centuries, and women are typically not allowed into those spaces. So the founder of GAIA really wanted to create a space and a club where women are encouraged to network, do business together, and really learn from each other so that we can really elevate each other in our different spheres of influence. So I'm a founding member of GAIA Africa, and it's something that I'm very, very passionate about. And our mission is to really have multiple clubs across the African continent just to continue to really empower women to be professional women to reach the peak of their careers and their businesses. So that's GAIA Africa. Sponsors for Educational Opportunity, or SEO, as it's normally called. That's an organization that is focused on ensuring diversity within investment banking and finance, private equity, and professional services. So they partner with organizations and work with students to make sure that they can place Black and brown children, kids, into internships of investment banks, private equity firms, accountancy firms, law firms, So it's really helping to increase the diversity from the university level into some of these large organizations. So that's also one that I'm part of. I've mentored some people that come through SEO. So I've had a couple of mentors as well that, you know, they're looking to start their first investment banking internship. They, you know, they want some tips, they want some advice. So that's also something I'm very passionate about, is making sure that we can increase the diversity within some of these large investment banks. I remember being the only woman and the only Black person at my team at JP Morgan. So being involved with SEO is definitely something that's close to my heart. And then the last one is a company called Rising Tide Africa, which is one of the largest female angel investing groups on the continent. So it's really how we're able to come together as women to invest, typically angel investing rounds, so smaller ticket sizes, but really encouraging women who sometimes have been reluctant to invest into equity, encouraging women and teaching them about venture capital and showing them the potential of angel investing across different sectors. So that's also one that I'm a member of. We've done multiple investments, and we're always excited to welcome women who may have never done an investment into our club, just to help to educate them, train them, and really show them the potential of angel investing on the continent. So, you know, I think we have one of the largest angel investing networks now, and it continues to grow rapidly. So it's really about making sure that women are also able to create generational wealth. Men have been doing this for centuries, but women sometimes are reluctant to put their money to work. So that's also something that I'm very passionate and very glad to be a member of.
They sound like extraordinary organizations. I just want to return to some personal reflections just to close. You have made your journey look easy without various setbacks, but I'm sure there have been setbacks along the way or challenges. Were there any that you learned from and perhaps share?
Yeah, I think there's definitely been a lot of setbacks and challenges and a lot of disappointment and rejection, I would say, over my career. Fundraising as a young Black African woman for a first-time fund investing in Africa, there are a lot of no's, a lot of no's there. So definitely had a lot of setbacks. But I think what I've learned from those setbacks is that you just have to understand your purpose. You have to understand why, your why, and why are you waking up to do this every day. And I think once you hone in on that and understand it, it helps you to go through those difficult times. I always say that understand that your why is bigger than you. And if your why is bigger than you, then you typically go through those moments of disappointment with ease, because this is something that's much bigger than me. You know, other women will look at this and be encouraged to start their own funds, be encouraged to start their own businesses. And in my own small way, we can help to level the playing field for women in private equity and also women in entrepreneurship generally. So yes, I've definitely had a lot of setbacks and a lot of disappointment. But I think always coming back to my why and my purpose has helped me get through those.
And I'm sure many of the female entrepreneurs you work with and mentor are experiencing their own setbacks and rejection. How do you coach them to kind of develop that muscle, I suppose, that thick skin to cope with rejection and go to fight another day?
Yeah, I always tell them to hone in on their why. I think having an understanding and sense of purpose is one of the biggest driving forces in the world. That purpose drives you. That purpose makes you focused. It makes you commit to the goal. And I think once you have clarity around that, you can really go through anything. Because if someone rejects you, you just say, well, you're not part of the plan. On to the next person. So having that thick skin is something that's definitely developed. That muscle has to be developed over time. But I think if you're able to really have clarity on your purpose and have clarity on your calling, then it helps you develop that quite quickly. So that's what I always say to my mentees, is have clarity on your sense of purpose. Understand why you're here and make sure that it's not just for yourself. Make sure that you're making an impact for people around you. Because when you combine purpose with impact, it makes you really go through those challenging periods pretty easily.
Has there been any key piece of advice that you've heard, or any creed or motto that you live by? And we've already talked about knowing your why, but in terms of the work you do and the mission you follow.
Yeah, so I think for me, one of my biggest mottos is that a river doesn't cut through rock by its power, but by its persistence. I think that's something that's always stuck with me. is just keep at it, keep going, remain focused, be persistent, and you will achieve your objectives and your goals. I think people value persistence, people value your follow-up, people value that you're consistent in your messaging. So I think that's always something, you know, you don't have to be the most powerful person in the room. As long as you're diligent, you can always achieve your goals. So I think that's something that I stand by. That's something that I live by, is persistence, determination, grit is the best way to be able to achieve your objectives.
Well, Adesu, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you here. Your grit and resilience are so palpable and so inspirational. And as a thought leader and a role model for the women in finance today and the generations to come, I feel that your contribution is so valuable. So thank you for coming here and giving us the privilege of hearing from you and for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors on their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.